Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home services marketplace. And Angie is here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. My son needed a major yard cleanup at his new home. We went straight to the Angie website and found a bunch of local, reliable, and affordable pros to handle the job, and one did pronto. Angie can help you find the best price for your project. Angie lets you request and compare quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps, or book services at an upfront price based on local data. Angie has cost guides that tell you what others have paid for similar projects, both nationally and in your area. Get started at Angie.com. That's ANGI.com, or download the app today. The app and website are free to use. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Victor Davis Hanson Show, The Traditionalist. We're recording on Friday, September 17th, 2021. I'm Jack Fowler, the host. I am the director of the Center for Civil Society at American Philanthropic, the namesake of this show, and that is Victor Davis Hanson. He is the Martin and Ely Anderson Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution, and the Wayne and Marcia Buskey. Is it Buskey, Victor?
Yes, it is. But I've heard both. I've heard both. I've heard Busk and Buskey, so I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, I apologize to the Buskeys if they prefer Buskey, and I've been saying it Busk all along. But at Hillsdale, where you just recently ended your 2-week annual gig of teaching we'll have more about your bio, Victor, later on in this episode. Before we get into the first topic, which will be General Milley and his comments that he made today. Again, we're recording on September 17th. I want to encourage our listeners to visit victorhanson.com. There is, as I've said before, a ton of original material there. You can still read some of the original material without being a subscriber, but it behooves you to subscribe to the premium service, very affordable. Victor has this ongoing series right now on the Historian's Corner that's extremely worthwhile. Anyway, while you're at the website, go to the right-hand column, scroll down a little bit. You'll see the link for The Dying Citizen, How Progressive Elites, Tribalism, and Globalization Are Destroying the Idea of America. Big book, important book, out the first week of October, I believe October 5th, but order it on Amazon. It'll show up at your house, probably publication day. I know there are actual hard copies of the book printed and circulating around to folks who are planning to review it and for other marketing purposes. Anyway, Victor, let's begin briefly talking about General Milley and his comments today. But first, there's this important message.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
We're back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show, The Traditionalist. I know, Victor, that and one of the other podcasts under the umbrella of the show, that's The Culturalist, which you do with the great Sammy Wink, that you did discuss at length the allegations made in the forthcoming book, The Peril, by Bob Woodward and Robert Costa, that had claimed that General Milley was discussing calling up the Chinese, Red China, to tell them, don't worry, this Trump crazy guy will warn you if you're attacked, and other such things that smack of
of treason. So I don't want to, we don't need to go over the same ground that you've discussed with Sammy on the culturalist, but Victor, do you have any quick thoughts today about the comments made today by General Milley that what he did was perfectly within his rights and the duties of his office, and maybe also some the comments that Joe Biden made earlier this week, I think 2 days ago, where he said he was totally in support of General Milley?
That book by Costa or Woodward and Costa is called The Peril, and that's ironic because the peril wasn't Donald Trump. It was the U.S. military as embodied by General Milley. And when he says he's perfectly within his rights, he's not. He's not telling the truth. Under the Act of 1947 and 1953 that was refined and focused and narrowed, and under Goldwater Nichols of 1986 that even narrowed the latitude of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs and the Joint Chiefs in toto, it's very clear, chairman of the Joint Chiefs does not have operational command. He cannot get into a room of generals and tell them this is the procedure and you don't do something unless you contact me. He cannot do that. He cannot conduct foreign policy. He cannot call up a foreign military and on his own freelance and tell them that I, the embodiment of the U.S. military, will warn you if there's going to be, he can't do that. If he can do that, then we don't have a constitutional republic. He's had a coup. He can't do that. In fact, he should resign immediately if he's not court-martialed. That's in violation of three statutes. And that's, we're not even getting into the Uniform Code of Military Justice, Article 88 and all that about disparaging the commander-in-chief, but he does not have the legal right. If Donald Trump wants to order a military operation, then he calls the Secretary of Defense and says, this is, we want to get rid of Soleimani. The Secretary of Defense then says, I will contact the relevant people in the field. The Joint Chiefs at that point are not involved. All they're involved right. in is they go to Donald Trump and say, earlier, if you want to take Soleimani out, it is our considered collective opinion that this is bad, this is good, this is both. You make the decision, but we have to advise you of the military ramifications, deterrence, strategic ramifications of that decision. At that point, their role is over with. And then he makes the decision based on their advice that he can take in part or not at all or in total. And then he issues the order and then the chain of command kicks in. The Joint Chiefs, General Milley, is not in the chain of command. And yet everything he said that he's done was in the chain of command in the sense of disrupting the chain of command. Mm-hmm. He said he got into a room of generals and told them what would be the procedure for nuclear weapons protocol. That's his procedure. That's not anybody else's. He has no right to go tell a Chinese official that he has characterized the United States government as messy and there's a crisis and he will tell them if we're going to attack. What he essentially did, Jack, is he told the Chinese government that we are don't know what we're doing and it's chaos over here. And the Chinese, and that hurt us. That lowered our deterrence. And we know that because China has done nothing but probe our weaknesses vis-a-vis Taiwan. Right. And they have a feeling that we're not in control and that there are people in the U.S. military that are not following the laws of the U.S. military. And then finally, Jack, how did this all come to light? Is it because trailblazing investigative journalists, Costa and Woodward, find out and they press Milley and they said, did you do this? No, it's Milley or they, in a pleasant conversation, wanted to give credit to the theme of the book, The Peril. Donald right. Trump. So Milley volunteered thinking, I'm going to be an iconic hero. Once people understand how I broke the law for a higher law as I saw it, they're going to lavish me with accolades. In fact, that's what's happening on the network news and MSNBC and what have you. So it's a black day in the history of civilian military right. relations.
Do you remember, Victor, once upon a time, liberals made movies like 7 Days in May that Burt Lancaster, a Kirk Douglas movie about a general usurping the president's powers or attempt to. And now, yeah, the cheerleading for General Milley is from the left media is kind of sickening, more than sickening. Victor, let's talk about a few other issues. We'll stay on military matters. We'll talk about the US, UK, Australia. Let's call it a pact to push back against China with submarines. We're also going to talk about the border crisis later in the podcast. The infamous gala at the Met in New York, where AOC famously wore tax the rich dress unmasked while everyone else was masked. And then I'm going to ask you this about Nicki Minaj. You can punt if you don't want to, but I know you were in studio the other day with Tucker Carlson on his show, and it was a big topic that day, and I think you might have some cultural thoughts on that. But let's go to Australia, where the United States, United Kingdom, and Australia created some nuclear submarine pact. It essentially means that the United States will use nuclear technology to build submarines for Australia. This has upset the EU greatly because the French were going to build subs of some sort. But, that internal, that's not an internal, that is external. But anyway, I'd like your thoughts on, is this a good thing that has happened? This pact, is it good? But are there consequences to it with our relations with Europe?
Well, it's a good thing and it's an ironic thing. And what I mean by that is that Australia is isolated. It's analogous to its position in 1939, 40, and early 41. In other words, it's a Western country with a continental nation parameter, and it has a very small population. And it's right next to 1.4 billion people in terms of relative distance. And it's rich in every imaginable natural resource that China is very eager to leverage. And they are not able, because of their population, not their spirit or their competency, they're very competent, very spirited, as we've known through a number of wars we fought alongside the Aussies, but they don't have the material wherewithal to stand up to China. So if you're going to give them submarines, they have to be the best in the world. And France's submarines were not the best in the world. They need a nuclear-powered submarine that can go for weeks under the oceans with a ballistic missile capability, for now conventional. So that was a good idea. But the irony is that the way that Joe Biden did it, he didn't call Macron apparently up and say, let's console about this, or maybe you can sell him one or two something. This is what they accused Donald Trump of doing.
Right.
Joe Biden was supposed to be the adult in the room, was going to be the healer. And the result is that Donald Trump made them pay $100 billion more in defense appropriations, and they hated him for making them more militarily readily. Joe Biden, after the Afghan disaster, where he left 8,000 NATO troops in the dark, without any worry at all how they were going to get out or how their people were going to get out, now doesn't consult and does that. So it's highly ironic.
Victor, let's talk about the border. The border crisis is a crisis. It has been a crisis for months. It's clearly been off the, other crises have knocked it off the main news. But I think even if there weren't other crises, the media, our liberal media in America would not be drawing attention to it. That said, this week, there's some reports that Haitians, thousands and thousands of Haitians are crossing the border over the Rio Grande. Remember, Cubans could not come. If Cubans during 2 months ago when there were protests in Cuba, we were not going to let Cubans in. But Haitians can come in, and anyone else can come in right now over the southern border. Is it even a border anymore? But Victor, just like you're, of course, by the way, at the same time, we are bringing in 60,000 Afghanis to relocate into America. Many of them have not been vetted. Your thoughts, Victor, on as this crisis grows, your thoughts on it? And if you had any particular thoughts about Kamala Harris, who I thought was supposed to be in charge of this and putting it, keeping it under control. I haven't seen a peep about her on anything, and including the border crisis. So yeah. Your general thoughts, Victor.
Let's reformulate it, Jack, in a little different way. Let's say that you wanted to imagine a scenario in which the United States had no border and no control over who came, and it was an ungodly humanitarian and health and political, cultural, social economic disaster. You couldn't do any worse than what we're doing. You couldn't imagine anything worse. We're going to have 2 million people from all over the world crossing the southern border without tests, without vaccinations, at a time when Joe Biden is saying, if you work for a business of 100 employees, you're going to have to be vaccinated, or you're going to have to be tested every week, or federal employees and soldiers. The soldiers are, remember, escorting Afghan refugees 100,000 strong without vaccination. So think of that for a minute. You, American citizen soldier, you're going to have to get vaccinated, even if you've had COVID. You, foreign national, about we know nothing about, we wouldn't want to impose on you and ask for a vaccination. This is insane. And then when you add to this equation the idea that we don't know how to support these people, they're going to tax the social services. It's very mysterious how the distribution seems not to be proportionally represented sometimes. And it's sort of reminiscent of the new equity that they are invoking about the distribution of monoclonal antibodies, a very effective treatment for COVID. It doesn't seem to be based on medical utility or the number of cases or the, you know, get the biggest bang for the buck. It seems to be political. This seems to be political. And I think at some point, I mean, look, if you look at those pictures, there's no outhouse, there's no facilities, there's no toilets, there's no showers. And why are these people coming? They're coming because Joe Biden and his administration opened the borders. Why did they open the borders? They opened the borders because they said to themselves, we have flipped California. And it's no longer the state of Ronald Reagan, Pete Wilson, George Stupmajian. We have flipped New Mexico. We have flipped Colorado. We are flipped Nevada. We're about to ready to flip Arizona. We flipped Georgia. And we want to flip as many states as we can. Our message does not appeal to 51% of the electorate. Therefore, we have to do one of two things. A, we have to change the demography and let in 1 million or 2 million people who are A, dependent on government, are ripe for what I would call the diversity argument that you are suffering from the banes of white privilege, white supremacy. You have solidarity with other non-white people. And three, you're going to be dependent for a long, long time because you don't have a high school diploma. You don't have educational skills. You're going to be exploited. And we are here to give you cradle to grave social services. That's what they're doing. And do they care about the American poor? My hometown, looking out the window at it, do they think that when these people come up to a place like Selma, California, they're not going to impact dialysis for our poor, or the emergency room at our hospital, or the schools that are trying so hard to have advanced placement and are now finally evolved beyond just bilingual education? They don't care about this because the people who are the architects of this policy, whether it's state or local or federal, for the most part, their children do not go to public schools that are going to be impacted. They don't live with people who are immigrants. They don't socialize with them. This is a top-down, let them eat cake attitude. And that ground-level disaster, then let the other people deal with. Let the Border Patrol people kind of deal with 10,000 people where there's no toilet facilities, you have no idea who has COVID or who doesn't. Do you think that somebody comes across the border with 101 temperature and a cough is going to say, I raise my hand, I think I've got COVID. Can you please? No, he's not going to say that. And so it's a disaster, and it's malicious. Malicious is a good adjective.
Right.
And it's nihilistic. It's almost as if the left is saying to us, if you look at the way we got out of Afghanistan and you look at this paying people $21 an hour not to work, and if you look at the way that they shut down 3 million barrels of fossil fuel, oil, and gas production, it's almost as if they said, you know what? I'm going to screw this thing up. I'm going to make it chaotic. I'm going to just destroy things. This is anarchy. This is nihilism. And then, you know what? Out of this, we're going to get social justice. We're going to get critical legal theory. We're going to get new monetary theory because we're going to destroy it and start with a year zero mentality. And that's what they're doing.
Speaking of top down, it's hard to find a more top event than the annual gala in New York at the Met Museum, this fashion show. And actually, you know, once upon a time, the late Pat Buckley, who was the the wife of Bill Buckley, but a friend. Nevertheless, she and some others. I think you may know some folks who whose spouses once ruled the roost in that kind of fashion world in New York. Well, it's not that way anymore. This is a tremendously political event. And what filled the airwaves earlier this week was AOC attending that event, draped in some tax the rich dress. Everyone, all the elites, and they were elites, just ask them, unmasked and enjoying themselves, surrounded by people with masks. And so there was a lot going on there for commentary. Do you have any thoughts about that that event?
If anybody thought that the Democratic Party was not the party of the very wealthy, then all they had to do was go to the Obama gala a few weeks ago or this Met Vanity Fair thing, and they can see what it's the Democratic Party and the left is all about. It's a medieval idea that there are certain celebrities, certain politicians, corporate people, Silicon Valley people, Hollywood people, professional athletes, and they're very wealthy and they are entitled to certain exemptions from their own ideological positions. And one of them is they don't have to wear a mask. Obama didn't wear a mask. Did you notice when we got pictures of the Obama gala that all the servant class had masks on, but not Obama? And the same thing with AOC, all the servants had masks on. It's not easy to wear a mask. I had to go on a long trip and I was in 20 hours waiting in airports, planes, circling around diversions. You wear a mask for 20 hours, sense of well-being, it's disorientating. And yet we don't even care about the servant class. They're just supposed to do it. And this is from people who have lectured us ad nauseum that they are the voice of the working class. They're not. The Democratic Party is a small elite, bi-coastal mostly, who are wealthy and feel they should be privileged, or kids should be in prep school. They should hang out with one another. They're celebrity starved. And then it's a vast underclass that's subsidized by the federal government, and it's at war with the lower and middle and upper middle class. That's what it is. Somewhere around 60 AD, a Roman noble, Petronius Arbiter, wrote a novel called the Satyricon. And we don't have much of it. We have about the fragments, 15th and 16th books and other places. But the theme is Trimalchio's banquet. And he describes what Rome in the first century has become. And boy, when you look at the emphasis on food and fashion and name dropping and money and the servant class, it's that we saw at the Obama gala or this one for the Met, it's no different than what Petronius was describing in the Satyricon.
Victor, before we take on that last item about culture and the great Nicki Minaj, throwing you a curveball here. At this point in his presidency right now, Joe Biden, I'm looking at a headline of a place I used to work. It's called A Flailing President. Do you see him as flailing, or more importantly, do you think he sees himself as flailing? And give him the ability to be compos mentis.
I think he doesn't know where he is sometimes. He seems to be, I don't know if it's a side effect of a heart medication, that he's got a chronic cough. He can't finish a sentence without coughing. And he gets angry if you cross him. And like many people who have been cognitive challenged, you can't discuss things with him. He just lies. He just says, oh, there's nothing wrong with Afghanistan. And you can't, he doesn't want any discussion at all because he can't discuss it. He can't explain. And he keeps giving these very strange revelation of prompts. They won't let me ask questions. I'm not supposed to do this. It's time for me to go, they told me. And so he's not in control. And so who is in control? Nobody's in control. Sometimes I feel that the Obamas are in control. Sometimes I think it's the Kamala Harris people. Sometimes I think it's Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. Sometimes I think it's the tribalism in the Congress and the Senate. But there's no chaos. I mean, there's nothing but chaos. I mean, economic policy, we're headed for 7 or 8% annualized inflation when we've never had 7 or 8% annualized inflation when you take a 25-year or 30-year-old mortgage at 2.7%.
Right.
You think that all these people with money are going to start giving money to banks and saying, you know what? I really want that 2.5%, 2.7, whatever the bank skims off, but 2.5% on my money. That's just a great deal. Why it's losing 8% of its value every year. They're not going to do that. And the Federal Reserve knows they're not going to do that. And they're going to raise interest rates. And then you think these people want to pay 20, 30, 40% more on a house than just a year ago when they know that they cannot get a 2.7% loan? And you go up 5% or 6%, you're going to double the monthly payment. And all of a sudden, these enormously inflated prices are not going to be competitive because the interest rate won't subsidize them anymore. So I think it's really scary, but there's no cognition, there's no recognition, there's no assessment of where we're headed to a stagflationary economy. Or the complete, I just watched this long press conference with General McKinsey, and it was tragic. We killed these people, and they would not admit it for 2 weeks. 12 these innocent people in Afghanistan, Jack. And right. then he said, well, we've had success. This was not a success. This was a non-success. Non-success? Is that what you call killing 12 people?
Right.
Why didn't you tell us about it? He said, well, this should not, the enemy won't think that we're any less ready to strike. Yes, they will. They know that if American people will not put up with killing 12 civilians, and the next time that the military tries to have a quote unquote over the horizon strike, they're going to be very careful. And then he says, well, you don't think the Taliban gave us the information. It doesn't matter what you think. They're in control of the government. They're in control of the country. And if you say you have 60 vectors, I don't know what that means, but he says he has 60 vectors, then that means maybe some of them are getting genuine information from the Taliban. They don't know it's from the Taliban. The point is, we don't know.
Yeah.
And when he says, well, this was a one-time thing because we had people on the ground. Now we don't have people
on the ground. Right.
We do have people on the ground. We have over 100 of them.
Hostages. Right.
It's worse. They're hostages. So we're going to start seeing videos of people being executed, mostly Afghans, but maybe not all. And at some key point, Al-Qaeda or ISIS is going to take over certain areas, and then they're going to start doing that to Americans. And then what are we going to do? We're going to be in bad straits. And this is all at a time when you and I just discussed Millie. So we're losing deterrence.
Right. But over the horizon is presented as a reasonable national security policy. I had never heard of it before. Maybe
I don't
it was
like
just
this euphemism, but I don't like when you kill people, you call it a non-success. I don't like it when you don't know where you're getting the information, you call it an intelligence vector. I don't like it when you have no ability to be on the ground. You have no bases. You have no immediate access to tactical operations, but from remote locations. And you euphemize that and call that over the horizon as if it's a legitimate or even a superior methodology. It's not. Over the horizon means we're blank.
Right. Right.
That's what it means.
Right. Yeah.
It starts with an F, but that's
what I know that. I got it. It's not fire truck. Okay. Victor, the last topic on today's episode of The Traditionalist is Nicki Minaj. Now, I can't believe we'd ever be, my wildest dreams would have thought we would be talking about Nicki Minaj on the Victor Davis Hanson show, but let's, because I think what happened earlier this week was a telling thing. She tweeted some, she has a huge following on Twitter or Instagram, millions of people follow her, reported about the vaccine and a cousin's friend of a cousin, some kind of testicular bad reaction to this cousin who lived somewhere in the Bahamas, somewhere Trinidad. Anyway, she was immediately attacked. How could you be? This whole thing about misinforming, this like it's the sacredness, this religious doctrine now, you are misinforming. And she, unlike, say, we've seen these cowering episodes, not necessarily in vaccine stuff, but remember with the, oh, I can't think of his name, the quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, who last year immediately went, he just started groveling. But she's not a groveler. She's like, screw you. And she attacked, this is Joy Reid at MSNBC, attacked her and has kept up her attack on the attack on the attackers. Anyway, I think it's an interesting cultural happenstance. Do you have any thoughts about it?
Yeah, I mean, you were vaccinated. I was vaccinated because we thought that the risk of side effects from the vaccination were less than the risk of COVID. And we were told that, you know, remember how this thing was sold to us. Don't worry about the other person. Do not worry about it. You get vaccinated, you're 96% protected. You can be in a room with COVID people. It's not going to hurt you. And this whole change in atmosphere and landscape and ideology came when the vaccines were shown, at least in the case of the Delta variant or over across time and space, not to be as effective as advertised. There were so-called breakthrough cases. And this came at a time when we had increasingly a loss of confidence in our medical authorities. And we did so because, you know, masks don't matter. Oh, got to get a mask. Oh, got to get two masks or quarantine. Got to, you know, stop this curve. No, you know what? We're going to keep going for a little while. Oh, you know what? If you're a BLM demonstrator, then it's more dangerous to your mental health not to break the quarantine. So that's okay. And, you know, gain of function. No. Yes, maybe kind of. Wuhan laboratory can't be. No connection with the pangolin or a bat. Oh, maybe it is. So there's been so much misinformation coupled with a self-righteous exactitude that we are experts. And that's one element. And she is saying to us, the subtext is, I may not know what I'm doing, but I'm a citizen. I'm a unique individual. I have a right to have an idea. And until you can give me exactitude, then you've lost credibility. And that's true. They have. And the second thing, the message, as I understand it, because I don't know a lot about her, but
glad to hear that.
She's saying to a particular group of people, elite professional classes that get in everybody's business.
Right.
Many of them are the white bicoastal elite, the left-wing progressives, the minority, professional minority class. But she's saying to them, I don't care what you think. I don't care if you call me names. I'm going to call you worse names. And she's retaliatory.
She did.
And they're thinking, uh-oh, I have a black woman and I can't shame her like I do black conservatives, that she doesn't appreciate all the things I've done for her as a white progressive. And this woman's talking back to me, uh-oh, I don't like this. And that's what it's about. And she knows that. And so she's basically telling the white progressives and the white professional minority club, don't do me any favors. This is all aside from the medical question.
Right.
Of whether we should all be vaxxed or not. But the problem that our authorities have is they can't tell us if we all got vaxxed, if everybody was vaxxed. They keep suggesting that there'll be zero COVID. And then they say, well, new variant, Epsilon, Gamma, you know, or Delta, right. Who knows? So they don't have exactitude. They don't have knowledge. Science is not perfect, and they act as if it is. And then these self-appointed censors go around and getting everybody's business. And, you know, I'm speaking kind of passionately because I just got back from Hillsdale College.
Mm-hmm.
15 days, no mask, no social distancing. They encourage everybody to get back. All the faculty have been vaccinated and vaccinated very early. They encourage the students, but there's no Stanford University policy. You have to be tested every week. You've got to download your vaccination. You know, you're going to trace your cell phone pings, none of that. And nobody, I mean, there's people who get ill, they get COVID, they get tested. If they're positive, they go into quarantine. But there's no epidemic there, at least yet. And life goes on. So what do I'm saying? I'm saying the university is functional. And these other universities are dysfunctional. So you have a choice. Everybody has a choice. They're going to say, you know what? Am I a tragic person or am I therapeutic? Therapeutic means I want everything perfect. I can control nature. I can control the environment. I can control everything or else. Or the tragic person says, I'm going to do my best, but I'm going to do some so with courage And I'm going to do some so with self-doubt and know that it's not perfect, but I'm going to do my best. I'm going to try to make this country continue to function. Because there's something that we're missing, Jack, in this whole conversation. And that is, if you go to a hospital and there's not a nurse there, or you go to a store and there's not baby formula there, or you get on an airplane and that guy tells you that they're short, they had to wait 4 hours because they're short attendance, or they're going to make a sudden diversion because they have no fuel. That's happened to me, I think, 3 times in the last 3 weeks. Then that's important. And right. It's not a zero sum game where we're all going to get vaccinated or we're all not, or we're all going to conquer. No, it's cost to benefit analysis. If you shut down the economy again, people are going to die. And people are dying right now because they didn't get that PSA exam. They didn't get that breast exam. They didn't get that so-called optional surgery. They didn't get to see their parents in the rest home. All of those are cost. And these quote-unquote Karens never factor in that cost.
Right. Layer on top of that, pay people not to work. It's just a prescription for a screwed up country. Victor, but that's about all the time we have. But as is our relatively new custom, we do want to thank the folks, the listeners who all listeners, thank you. But those who listen on iTunes and leave 5-star reviews, which is what your average is. There are a few, but they're about 1,600 people who have left ratings. And it averages out to 5.0 because everything else is kind of anecdotal. So that's pretty sterling. And those 5 stars, of course, are for Victor. I want to just read one of the – some people actually leave written reviews, and one of them that came in the other day was from someone named Jack – calls himself Jack Mule. Wow. And this is what he wrote. Been a listener for a little over a year when a family member introduced me to VDH. I eagerly look forward to every episode, but the latest, The Culturalist, that's with the great Sammy Wink, folks, is one of my favorites. Thank you, VDH, for continuing to provide us with knowledge and opportunities to expand our minds and learning. I hope that although classics is seemingly on the collegiate crash cart, I hope and pray that it can be revived in the near future by unknown, as of yet, researchers and academics. God bless you, VDH. Keep it up. Thank you. 5 stars, as always. Thank you, Jack Mule. And thanks to the others who leave reviews. We do read them. We care what you think. And I guess that's about it, other than to say we'll be back with another episode of the Traditionalists in a few days, right?
Almost. There is such a thing called the dying citizen that lays out the historical background of what we're talking about. And that's the new book on October 5th.
Myself. Well, you did. I did plug it earlier, but I'll remind the people.
I'm trying to save you from having to plug it too much.
Well, let me do it one more time, though. Go to victorhanson.com, listeners, great listeners. Subscribe to victorhanson.com. When you're on the website, whether you're subscribed or not, look on the right-hand column, click the link, and order today at Amazon, The Dying Citizen. You'll get it the first week of October. So that's all the time we have. Thanks for listening. Thank you, Victor, for sharing your wisdom. And we'll be back soon enough again with another episode of The Traditionalist, part of the 3 podcasts of The Victor Davis Hanson Show. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank everybody for listening. I really appreciate it. I do.